From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, and joining me on the panel this week are Marketplace correspondent Nancy Marshall Genzer and VOA executive producer Steve Reddish. Welcome, Nancy and Steve.
Hello.
Hi, glad to be with you.
Here are the issues. President Biden outlined economic opportunities between the U.S. and the fastest growing continent at the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington. The three-day gathering included top-level meetings, new initiatives, business deals, and a gala dinner at the White House. Biden signed the Respect for Marriage Act into law in front of thousands on the White House lawn. The new law provides federal recognition for same-sex marriages, a measure born out of concern that the Supreme Court could reverse its legal support of such relationships. The Federal Reserve issued its smallest interest rate hike since June as the central bank attempts to curb high inflation without derailing a surprisingly resilient economy. A Bahamian judge denied FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried bail hours after U.S. prosecutors accused the 30-year-old of misappropriating billions of dollars and violating campaign laws in what has been described as one of America's biggest financial frauds. The Biden administration is finalizing plans to send the Patriot missile defense system to Ukraine to further aid the country against Russia's ongoing attacks. France brought together international donors focused on helping Ukraine cope with Russian attacks on the country's infrastructure. The United Nations reports about 50% of Ukraine's energy infrastructure has been destroyed. Well, those are the issues, and let's get started. Well, President Biden hosted the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington. He outlined a number of initiatives for leaders. But other countries also courting Africa, such as China, Russia, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates, are also in competition as well with the U.S. So where does the U.S. stand with all of this competition?
Well, U.S. is trying to play catch up. President Obama did hold his own U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit back in 2014 with a White House dinner under a tent on the South Lawn. But then former President Donald Trump pretty much ignored Africa and he never even visited the continent. So President Biden, I think, is trying to pick up where President Obama left off.
I'm going to quote Ed Luce of the Financial Times, who said, Africa seems to always be on tomorrow's agenda for the United States. And Biden picking up this summit, as Nancy mentioned, from Barack Obama in 2014, is yet another show of U.S. support and desire to be involved and to work with Africa and to have influence in Africa for various different projects, as well as diplomatic influence in Africa. The commitment to invest $55 billion over the next 3 years is supposed to go to help Africa build an infrastructure, help the health of its people, and moving toward climate change, because Africa is going to have about a quarter of the population of the world within the continent by 2050. And that is a huge opportunity for both economic advancement as well as economic markets, along with the opportunity for more security, especially if there's an opportunity for the U.S. to work with individual African nations, building democracy and building secure nations, secure borders, secure governments.
Yeah, and just building on what Steve was saying about the funding, the U.S. is going to invest nearly $20 billion in health programs in the Africa region, and that includes more than $11 billion for HIV/AIDS, more than $2 billion to fight malaria, $2 billion in support of family planning, $2 billion for humanitarian and the economic impacts of COVID. And then there's the money to help Africa survive climate change, $1 billion to support conservation, climate adaptation, and what the Biden administration is calling a just energy transition. And that could include funding for nuclear power plants in the future.
Africa seems to be this century's battleground, much like Central Asia was in the early 20th century in what was described back then as the Great Game, because The United States is not the only power, as Kim mentioned, in Africa that is seeking influence. China has been using for years the opportunity for not just cheap loans, but also cheap labor to come to various different African nations and build infrastructure, build ports, build railroads, build highways. And at the same time, Russia is expanding its influence throughout Africa, not so much in the infrastructure and building game through selling weapons and using various different mercenary groups to help governments, to help dictators take or remain in power. So this is much more than just an economic opportunity for the United States and for Africa as far as cooperation. The United States sees Africa as an area where American influence is needed in order to blunt some of the influence that China and Russia and other nations already have in Africa.
I think that Russia's influence in Africa complicates things as far as Ukraine goes, because some African countries are kind of wary of criticizing Russia's invasion of Ukraine, even though they're hurt by it tremendously. They're paying more for oil and other forms of energy. And there's also they're being hurt by the global food shortage because there aren't as many exports of things like grain from Ukraine. So that really complicated things.
Steve, you had mentioned Africa's population is expected to double by 2050. And as you said, it will account for one quarter of the world's population, which is potentially a huge market for other countries, not to mention the vast reserves of rare minerals that will be needed to power the electric vehicles of the future. So when you're looking at this, are wealthy nations, especially Western nations, are they seeing Africa as a continent with more to offer rather than a continent full of problems such as conflict, food shortages, and poverty?
That's certainly how they're trying to frame it. President Biden said the United States is all in on Africa's future and trying to make sure that this is not seen as some kind of a game where Africa is a pawn. But you have to admit that the U.S. and these other nations are thinking about their own self-interest as well.
There's a fine line the U.S. is walking between cooperation and exploitation and trying to show various different African nations that indeed they may be getting exploited by other nations. The United States is coming in as trying to be a partner with African nations. How that works out, we'll see over the next few years. But this is the same kind of strategy that Barack Obama tried to employ, George W. Bush tried to employ in Africa. And it seems like we're still going down the same road of finding that fine line between exploitation and cooperation.
Really good points there. Well, in our next topic, President Biden signed into law the Respect for Marriage Act. The new law provides federal recognition for same-sex and interracial marriages. Americans really have come a long way for this. For example, in 2004, just 42% of Americans said they were in support of same-sex marriage, according to a Gallup poll. And today, according to NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll, it's 68%. So how important is it to have this law?
Well, it shows just how much public opinion has evolved on this. And also, President Biden himself has evolved. Remember when he was vice president, he really surprised everybody with a declaration on NBC's Meet the Press where he publicly supported same-sex marriage. And he had voted to support the Defense of Marriage Act years before that when he was a senator, which basically prohibited same-sex marriage. So he was turning around and saying he supported it. And shortly after that, President Barack Obama took the same position. Then other national leaders kind of followed their lead. So it's been a gradual evolution, and this kind of solidifies it.
The Supreme Court's decision in June to overturn nearly 50 years of legalized abortion in the United States is the reason why we have the Respect for Marriage Act that President Biden signed. It ensures that the federal government will recognize same-sex and interracial marriages, and perhaps more importantly, requires individual U.S. states to recognize valid marriages from other states, because it's a hedge to see if the Supreme Court follows what it did in the abortion ruling with what it might do and overturn precedent that it had set back in 2015, allowing same-sex marriage, as well The Supreme Court ruled in 1967 to allow interracial marriage here in the United States. So what this measure actually does is kind of codifies it, but it doesn't necessarily legalize it. It maintains that if a same-sex couple is married in one state and moves to another state, that other state has to recognize their union, and same with interracial couples. So what this really seems to be is much more of a hedge against possible action by the Supreme Court. And it also shows that, as you pointed out, the acceptance of same-sex marriage has risen to the point where it's politically inexpedient, it's politically fraught, especially if Republicans voted against it. And that's why you saw such a wide bipartisanship acceptance of this bill.
Although there are some states that can still ban same-sex marriage, this just says that they have to honor same-sex marriages in other states. Presumably they will. And this is important, has some economic benefits. Someone in a same-sex marriage could inherit property. Also, they could visit their partner in the hospital. Some hospitals, you know, say if you're in the intensive care unit, only family and husband or wife. So this has some real tangible benefits.
Well, it's time now for a quick break. And later, the collapse of a cryptocurrency exchange following arrest of its founder. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/issues. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype. Marketplace correspondent Nancy Marshall Genzer and VOA executive producer Steve Reddish. While consumer price index data released by the Labor Department still showed inflation near 40-year highs, but a slowdown in inflation that could give consumers some relief. So, Nancy, what can Americans expect from this?
Inflation, the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, which is a basket of goods that we all purchase, that rose just 0.1% from October to November, and it was 7.1% higher than the same time a year ago. That was lower than expected, and it was the second straight month where inflation was lower than expected. We had things like car prices were way down. The energy index fell 1.5%, 1.6%. Food prices did rise, but just by 0.5%. Rent is still rising, and it's up 7.1% year over year. But there is good news here. Used vehicle prices were down 2.9%, and they're down more than 3% from a year ago. So good news on inflation, and that could help the Federal Reserve as it raises interest rates to try to cool off the economy and tamp down inflation.
They've got an economic balancing act that I'm glad that they are dealing with and not someone like me, finding that sweet spot of raising interest rates just enough to stabilize prices with, as well as the likely event that there's going to be a rise in unemployment, but not too much to tip the country into recession. And it's a balancing act that we're going to really see the Fed try and walk over the next 6 to 12 months, because it's going to take a while for prices to come back down to earth to a point where they're only rising maybe 2 or 3% a year rather than a little bit more than 7% a year. And also to note, countries in Europe and in Asia and elsewhere, they're seeing inflation rates come down a little bit, but they're much higher than U.S. inflation rates are. So it's not just the U.S. that's feeling this, but as supply chains seem to be getting back to normal, as gas prices seem to be coming down because more gas is being made available, it's a balancing act that various different things that happen just worldwide could tip it in a different direction.
Pitcher Powell was asked about, Steve, what you were talking about. The Fed calls it a soft landing. It wants to increase interest rates and reduce economic growth just enough to cool things off and get inflation down to its target of 2% without causing a recession. I was at the press conference and Powell was asked, you know, do you still think that we can achieve a soft landing? And he said the path is narrowed, but it's still possible. I asked Powell about the possibility of stagflation, where inflation is still rising, but economic growth stagnates. And really, the only cure for that is recession. And Powell said they're going to keep raising interest rates and hope for the best because inflation is out of control. The labor market is still strong, but the Fed projected that the unemployment rate will rise to 4.6% next year, and economic growth is going to slow to just 0.5%. So if there's not going to be a recession, we're going to have something awfully close to it.
Yes, and then another aspect on the economy, U.S. regulators held a hearing on the collapse of cryptocurrency exchange FTX following the arrest of founder Sam Bankman-Fried in the Bahamas. So this really takes me back to Enron, Tyco, Bernie Madoff, just to name a few. How did this happen?
Yeah, I'm going to read a little bit from the Securities and Exchange Commission complaint where it brought civil charges against Bankman-Fried. And it's pretty pointed. It says basically he built a house of cards and that he commingled his customers' money with his hedge fund, Alameda, to make, quote, undisclosed venture investments, lavish real estate purchases, and large political donations. And of course, Bankman-Fried is also facing criminal charges from the Justice Department now. He is in a heap of trouble, and the basic charge is fraud.
Question to Nancy, how does this affect all the other cryptocurrencies, crypto exchanges that are out there? Is there going to be some sort of move to regulate and legislate for cryptocurrency?
Well, this sure is an impetus for that. It's a real kick in the pants for Congress. Bankman-Fried spread a lot of money around, gave a lot of money to a lot of politicians, and he was pushing for the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to be in charge of regulating crypto. And it's a much smaller agency than the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. The CFTC has hundreds of employees. The SEC has thousands. That gives you an idea. So that had been the push, and that was the one bipartisan piece of legislation that seemed most likely to pass, is to have this smaller CFTC be in charge of crypto regulation. But now that may be changing because of what happened, and there is some spillover effect, not just psychological, but you know, it's been a little bit harder for some people to get their money back, and not just from FTX, which was Bankman-Fried's company.
Where is the money? And I know that he was using it for some real estate purchases.
You know, Kim, a lot of people would like to know where the money is. As I mentioned, some of it went to political candidates. Some of it went to these beautiful houses that Bankman-Fried bought for himself and his parents. Apparently, FTX employees were able to also help themselves to customer funds. It's not clear. And they really didn't have any kind of an accounting process, as far as I can tell. So that's a question that has yet to be answered.
It's not regulated, which means your money is not necessarily insured, or there are laws to protect consumers to get their money back. So investing in crypto is basically a shot in the dark with very little protection for consumers, whether it's the FTX or any other kind of cryptocurrency.
And the question for Congress that Congress has been stagnating on is whether you need completely new laws and new regulations just for cryptocurrency, or whether the current laws under which banks are regulated will do the trick. Now, one thing that's really interesting is the fact that the SEC is suing here. It is suing not on behalf of the consumers who lost money in FTX, but on behalf of people who invested in the FTX platform. There are 90 U.S. investors who invested millions of dollars in that platform. But you have to think to yourself, if the SEC can sue Bankman-Fried for fraud, then maybe the current laws do apply to cryptocurrency.
Very interesting. And I'd love to talk more on this, but we need to get in our last topic. The Biden administration is reportedly in its final stages of preparing to ship out the Patriot missile defense system to Ukraine to aid in its war effort against Russia. Ukraine really has been asking for this for some time. So how will this really work to help Ukraine, and will it even escalate Russia's attacks?
Russia's already warning of possible retaliation if the U.S. goes forward with delivering Patriot missile batteries to Ukraine. As you mentioned, Kim, this is like the first thing that Zelensky asked Biden for once Russia started bombing Ukraine, because the Patriot missile is one of the most reliable, most used air defense systems in the world. It can target aircraft, cruise missiles, some ballistic missiles, intercept them in the sky, blow them up, and keep things on the ground safe from incoming missiles. It's going to take several months for Ukrainian soldiers to be trained on them. As well, Ukraine is only getting one Patriot missile battery from the reports that we're seeing. The reason only one Patriot battery is going over there is to make sure that Russia is not so much appeased, but isn't provoked to the point of retaliating against NATO countries or the United States, as well as to keep Ukraine from trying to be offensive with these missiles.
And Steve, you were talking about training. Normally, the training takes months, and the Ukrainians are going to be learning this very, very quickly. But if they are able to operate it correctly, they could be shooting down Russian missiles and even aircraft way before they reach their targets inside Ukraine.
I also wanted to get in quickly that world leaders announced in Paris more than $1 billion in swift aid for Ukraine. And I think what was really significant about this meeting is that it included countries such as Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Turkey, Kuwait. So what kind of signal is this sending to Russia?
It's a real signal of unity. And yeah, as you say, Kim, it wasn't just the U.S. and Europe. You had more than 50 countries there. This money can be used to repair electrical, heating, healthcare, transportation, all these things that Russia has been bombing. So it's certainly going to help Ukraine survive in the short run, because right now you have millions of Ukrainians who don't have power. They don't have heat. And one interesting point that Zelensky made, the president of Ukraine made to the Europeans when he addressed this conference, was, look, if you help us now, you're going to prevent a huge wave of new refugees coming into your countries. He says just repairing the infrastructure of Ukraine will cost more than $840 million, though.
It's time now to find out what is weighing on the minds of our panelists this week. Nancy, what is weighing on your mind this week?
This week, we had the 10th anniversary of the horrible shootings at Sandy Hook, at the Sandy Hook Elementary School. And as a parent, I just cannot imagine that kind of a nightmare. I don't like to think about it. I would like to say, though, that it's not like these things happen every day. I have some friends from Australia, and this young man's girlfriend doesn't want to visit the U.S. because of all the mass shootings. So it's not like we walk out of our doors and immediately we're confronted by someone with a gun. It's not like that. But I will say that the deaths of children from firearms has dramatically increased. In fact, guns have become the leading cause of death for American children from age one and older. That happened back in 2020, according to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control. So it's clearly a huge problem, and we still don't have strong national gun control laws.
Thank you. And Steve?
A similar issue with the holidays approaching. I'm thinking about peace, and not just among the global warring factions, but peace to our society, our neighborhoods, and our people. And listening to the survivors of last month's shooting at a gay nightclub in Colorado Springs, hearing from the survivors of the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School, those kids are now in their teens. And what happened 10 years ago this week, and listening to these people, showed me how deep the mental and emotional scars from these shootings are, and how much more work we all have to do to ensure that there's peace on earth and goodwill toward men and women.
And we will close on those thoughts. My thanks to our panelists, Marketplace correspondent Nancy Marshall-Genzer and VOA executive producer Steve Reddish. I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for joining us for Issues in the News.